Welcome to the Texans Talk Podcast. I'm Mark Lane. You can follow me on Twitter at The Real Mark Lane. And I'm always joined by John Crumpler. John, they can follow you on Twitter at John H. Crumpler. But what's the best part about this time of year for you?
Ooh. Is there an answer you're expecting from me here? I'm supposed to.
No, I'm not a teacher.
Okay, I'm just making sure.
This is just open-ended.
I mean, Mark, we're coming up on the fall. It's the best time of the year. We're going to have football back. It's going to get a little cooler. There's very little to complain about as we transition from August into September.
Yeah, I'm really, really looking forward to the high school football that's kicking off some places tonight around Texas. In other places, obviously Friday night. And yeah, that's what I'm looking forward to, is that every day, starting on Thursday, is just going to be football, football, football. And then like Tuesdays and Wednesdays are going to be your weekend days from football.
Yeah. It's kind of weird. This is like the first full off season that I've kind of worked with you, where I was involved at pretty much every week of each month. And I feel like we haven't gotten a break from football, but at the same time, it has been a very long time since we played football, so I'm trying to juggle that. If that makes sense, I don't know if you would relate to that sentiment at all.
Yeah, not really, but it's okay. All right, so the Texans, they play their preseason finale tonight against the San Francisco 49ers at NRG Stadium, and here's what I want to know. What do you need to see? Well, not what do you need to see. Do you need to see extended action from the starters? Because against the Rams, the first team offense, they played the whole half. Now do you need to see them play into the third quarter, or are you good?
I don't think I need to see them play into the third quarter. It's hard because it looks like offensively, at least, we've seen a lack of willingness from Pep Hamilton to really fully unveil what his offense looks like. So I don't really know what we're going to learn about Davis Mills while Dameon Pierce isn't out there to really buff up the run game, while they refuse to use Brandon Cooks, who's going to be so important in how defenses want to play us in the secondary. I'd like to see more action just because we love the team. We write about the team. It'll be more interesting. I do think there's things we're going to learn. But really, with this one, just get the guys ready for live action. I do hope we see Cooks, Pierce, the whole cast of people, just so everyone's ready and has a little more game experience going into the regular season. But I don't need to see a ton because, frankly, at this point, guys have played. I want to stay healthy. I want to be ready for week one against Indianapolis. Get some good drives. Like, if you have two awesome offensive drives, and we see what you need to see, and everyone's feeling good, I would have no problem if we saw a quarter. I know we're going to see more than that. Lovie Smith obviously has talked a lot about how this they're taking this pretty seriously as a chance to get starters warmed up. But I wouldn't say I need to see anything. What about yourself?
Yeah, I want to see the first team offense in its entirety as complete as you can make it. I would like to see that for 2 to 3 series. I'm talking Brandon Cooks. I'm talking Laremy Tunsil. I'm talking who you would field week one against the Indianapolis Colts. That's who I want to see for 2 to 3 series. And then after that, I don't really care. But I need to see though what that looks like for the first 2 to 3 series. And after that, you know, if you want to bring in Jeff Driskel and just have it be the Jeff Driskel and Jim Morrissey handing off the Royce Freeman show, that's fine. Because I think they will have proven everything by that point. So that's just what I want to see. And in a selfish way, though it will not happen, I want to see Dameon Pierce behind the first team offensive line. I want to see him in there with the first team offense. That's what I want to see, because I kind of want to skip to the end. You know, I'll tell you the truth, John. I never saw one. Well, that's not true. I never saw one Marvel Comics movie, the MCU, until I saw a Captain America Civil War in May of 2016.
That's a good one.
That's the only one I ever saw. So when I went to see Infinity War, I didn't need to see all that. I just skipped to the end. And that's what it's like with Damian Pierce in this first team offense, is he's going to be the starting running back by November. We all know it. So let's just see what November looks like on this last preseason game of August. But again, that's like a self-centered thing. You know, Lovie Smith's not going to listen to me on that. So, you know, we'll just have to wait and see for that one. But that's what I want to see.
Yeah, I kind of feel the same way. All the reasons I'd want to see Damian Pierce, like you said, they're definitely selfish. It would be fun to know exactly what he's going to do, what he can provide behind that first team offensive line. It would be great to get a glimpse of that whole unit working together the way we've envisioned. Still, for all that we've written, for all that we've debated about the Texans' first team offense and what that might look like this year, we haven't seen it all come together. And you're right, I'd like to skip to the end, but at the same time, it is a meaningless game, and it would be such a blow to this team to lose anybody. Obviously, you know, you risk injury anytime you go to play football, but it would be really tough if anything were to happen to Pierce or happen to Cooks, really any of the offensive starters, because, and I tweeted this 2 weeks ago, this is a team that is going to need all hands on deck, more so than other teams that they really want to score. I don't know if there's going to be easy points for this offense, is what I would say. Mark, a follow-up question as we talk about things we want to see from the starters, things we want to see in the game. Are there any units you're going to be watching in particular? I thought it was very telling yesterday. Sports Radio 610 had Texans All Access, and I was listening to Nick Caserio, and he talked about how it's going to be a great test of physicality against the Niners, how regardless of who's on the field, the way that they're coached and the way that they play, it's going to reveal a lot in the trenches, which kind of got me excited about, hey, how is the offensive line from the starters to the depth down going to play as guys look for roster spots? Are there any units you're excited to watch?
Well, you talk about the offensive line in trenches. I was thinking defensive line because I like to see those guys eat. And they really do have a renewed focus and energy that comes with the continuity of having the same system for the past, you know, 24 months. So that's what I would want to see, is just how much, you know, just see how those guys stack up against the 49ers offensive line, even though they'll be playing second stringers and third stringers. But still, like Caserio said, these are guys that they're well coached. The 49ers have an identity, which comes from having the same coach since 2017. So that's what I want to see, is how ferocious the defensive line can still be going against the 49ers. So that's the unit that I'm watching.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good one to watch because, I mean, everyone in Houston, we're a little more excited about the defense than the offense. We know the offense needs some more playmakers. There are some pretty glaring holes that you can point to in the interior offensive line, a tertiary receiving option, even the starting tight ends. But the big question with the defense coming in was, can they generate enough pressure to show off how much better the secondary is? Because it doesn't matter if Petrie and Stingley and Steven Nelson are fabulous if the quarterback has all day to throw. There is a time limit on how long guys can really cover at the NFL when you're going up against that caliber of athlete. And I've been really just pleasantly surprised at how well the defensive line has played. They're getting, I know it's against backups. I know it's against some quarterbacks like Ian Book, who just refused to pull the trigger all night. They were holding on to the ball for forever, but they played really well. And there's some edge rusher. It's kind of given me faith in the group. Or do you think that's a performance that can translate to the regular season? And is there anyone in particular on the D line that you've been watching?
I think it's a performance that can translate, but it'll obviously have its challenges. One of the issues that the 2020 Texans had, and you know, it's relevant, is they couldn't stop the run, and they couldn't really rush the passer. So anytime the ball was snapped, quarterbacks just had all day to survey and go through their reads. It seems like with this defense, even though it's in preseason action, it just seems like they're at least doing something to disrupt the timing just a little bit. And because of that, you know, it does bring some optimism. But, hey, I mean, they're not going against first-team offensive lines yet. Matt Ryan, for example, when he takes the field at NRG Stadium on September 11th for the Colts, he's going to bring a lot of experience, a lot of knowledge, a lot of tape watching when it comes to going against the Texans defense. So, you know, still, I think the defense is taking a step forward. For me, I like what Thomas Booker has been doing. I like the deference he shows to Malik Collins. I like how he's just trying to not just fit in, but take the lessons that he's learned, not only at Stanford, but in his limited time with the Texans, and just be the best version of himself. It's kind of a contrast to some of the other rookie defensive linemen that the Texans have had in recent years.
I was going to say, I love how the veterans talk about Thomas Booker in terms of how he's learning, how quickly it's catching on for him. And I'm just on a more macro level, I think it's hilarious that Nick Caserios, he's taken two defensive tackles, and they've both been in day three of the draft, which most would consider a crapshoot. You're really lucky if you can find a role player, much less a starter. And in his first two drafts, he's found Roy Lopez, who's going to start at the one technique, be that big nose tackle for us, and Booker, who looks like a legitimate rotational piece in the interior line. And you could put him on the edge if you want, but really, he's going to be a factor. Meanwhile, Bill O'Brien, the former general manager, with a top 50 pick, could not find one defensive tackle. So it is a just a good development that we can find guys on the interior, especially for Lovie's defense and how much they really are going to ask for guys to get home.
Yeah, and some of that may have to do with just enabling your scouts and your personnel guys to, you know, go hunt. It may have been during the Bill O'Brien era that he wasn't taking in all the information from James Lipford and Matt Bazergan. And with Caserio, that's what he talks about, as he says, I get all the info and then I make the decision. And I think with Caserio also, is we've seen him use draft capital to target a player, not, oh, wait, here our number's coming up. Oh, wait, I might get bingo. Oh, we missed again. Oh, well, we have to settle for a receiver. Instead, he's saying, nah, this person's falling right here. Maybe we could get him. Here's the capital. All right, boom, we're getting our guy. We're not waiting on chance and Lady Luck and all this stuff. We're going to slide into Lady Luck's DMs with a trade package here and go get our guy.
Which is kind of an interesting strategy just because it is opposite to conventional thinking on how you're supposed to rebuild, which is, hey, go get as many draft picks as you can, take as many guys as you can. You want more throws at the dartboards of finding legitimate NFL starters. And meanwhile, Nick Caserio says, I trust my process, I trust my scouts, and they're really consolidating. But when guys like Thomas Booker hit, you can't fault the process, at least not right now.
No, you can't. So when guys like Kenyon Green haven't played in a preseason game yet and are in and out of practice and coming off of an injury and so forth, I mean, are they a flop for, I'm not talking his whole career, just talking for the 2020 season. I'm sorry. I'm really stuck in 2020, folks. For the 2022 season, is Kenyon Green basically a flop? I mean, is it's going to be AJ Cann and Max Sharping the whole time?
I don't think we need to go there yet, Mark. I mean, it sounds like Kenyon Green, they're working him up at a slow pace. I think something we've seen with this entire rookie class is that the front office and the coaching staff want to proceed with an abundance of caution with guys and any injuries, because let's be honest, the Texans are not playing for 2022 right now. They are playing for the future. This is a year to learn about what you have in the building and to set the foundation of how you want to play your opponents and really just learning what your guys can do in the systems that you currently have set up. So when it comes to Kenyon Green, he's going to play. One, you can watch the rest of the interior offensive line and you just know there's not enough talent to keep Green off the field once he's healthy, even if he's not 100%. As soon as he's comfortable and ready to go, I would have to imagine they put him out there. And then just speaking to Green, I'm not upset that I haven't seen him in the preseason. I mean, we're going to see him tonight, and I would have liked to have seen more by now. But also his college tape, the caliber of prospect that he is, suggests a player that is going to be an unequivocal upgrade from what they've been starting at the interior offensive line. I'm not remotely close to pressing the panic button. Are you really that worried?
When you look at it, I don't think the Texans are worried, because they've kept Titus Howard at right tackle, and that's usually their panic move, is to kick Titus Howard inside at a guard spot. So the fact that they haven't done that indicates that, you know, they expect him to be a part of that combination.
Yeah. The offensive line, it's been set since April. There's been no significant setbacks. This is not an injury that's going to force him to really miss time. So I'm not going to worry about that. They're keeping everyone set. The plan is still being followed. So no, I'm not worried about Kenyon Green.
Yeah, because if they could just have, really, you've only got, with Kenyon Green in there, you've only got two ambiguous spots on your offensive line. That's the other guard spot and center, because Justin Britt, you know, you figure he's not exactly going to be Mr. Durable, and you're going to see some Jimmy Morrissey throughout the season. And then the other spot, you know, AJ Cann, maybe some Max Sharping, more Cann than Sharping. But those other spots are solidified, and just to have three dominant, really you only got one dominant, but just three starter level at minimum guys on the offensive line, you figure that's going to help with the run game and just with road grading the opposition.
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of things you can ask Green to do in terms of pulling across the formation, in terms of feeling comfortable going to that left side that you did not do a year ago. And I would expect, I really do expect him to be an upper level guard in this league as soon as he's able to get on the field. He's just strong. And he did, I mean, when guys play that way in the SEC, you have to pay attention. He really had his way with people, and that was a tackle, and he was being asked to do different things. And now you're moved to the inside where you can play to a lot more of your strengths, to the power that Green really brings to. And like you said, with Tunsil, who we're going to talk about today's hypothetical topic in a little bit, but Tunsil's, he's a great, maybe not elite, maybe elite left tackle. And Howard looks to be a very good right tackle, someone that the team, I imagine, we'll be looking to re-sign. They're not going to let him walk after this year. Big expectations for Howard. The pieces of a upper-level offensive line are coming together, and that's why they took Green.
I like hypotheticals. Let's get into it.
All right, so I'll pitch it because you had not heard about it, or you've been thinking about it from a Dallas perspective, but I think Landry Locker brought it up earlier today. That
Why would Landry Locker do that?
Well, radio guys do like to have topics.
Or because he worked at ESPN 103.3 FM KESN in Dallas, Fort Worth earlier in his career. How about that?
I did not know that. That's actually good to know. But with Tyron Smith, one of the best left tackles in the game, probably the best left tackle of the last decade. He had a hamstring injury where the muscle came off the bone, which is pretty serious. He's going to be out until at least December. People have talked about with the Cowboys, who are a team that they kind of have to be all in for the playoffs. Mark, you can speak on that after this. But with the way that their contracts are structured, with the way that they built the team, could this be with the team that is desperate enough to give the Texans a worthy return on Laremy Tunsil? And a question of, and now John McClain is talking about it. Really, that's what Texans Twitter is talking about today, is if you would entertain offers on this. And Mark, I'll let you give your opinion first. Would you listen to offers on Laremy Tunsil from the Dallas Cowboys? And if so, how much would you need to part ways?
All right, so no, just because I know that, CeeDee Lamb, Trayvon Diggs, Micah Parsons, all their contracts are basically going to come up. Oh, and Dak Prescott's in the 2024-2025 salary cap window, and adding Tunsil could mess with that money, and you'd really only need him just for a little bit of time until Tyron Smith got healthy. You have someone in the future in Tyler Smith who you can kick out to left tackle, so you don't really need Laremy Tunsil for the future. So that's why, from a Dallas perspective, I think that they would say no. Also, if he comes back in December, that means you just have to hold it together until December without Tyron Smith, which is kind of what they did in 2020 when they had Brandon Knight and Terrence Steele starting at their tackle spots. So you hold it together till then. The NFC East is weak. You basically get Tyron Smith back for the theoretical playoff run. So, nah. Bill Parcells said that you can hide a tackle. And I think that's what Dallas is going to do, is just hide their left tackle till Tyron Smith gets back. So that's why I think they would say no. If I were the Texans, I would trade Tunsil, and I would try to get a first rounder and one of those conditional, you know, fourth, fifth round type picks, and really try to cash in on the 2023 draft. But what Nick Caserio does, it's interesting, that made a lot of people like Scott. Okay, I'll be honest with you, all right? So on the USA Today Sports internal communications, when Nick Caserio was wheeling and dealing around this time last year, they'd laugh at him. Oh, he traded Mark Ingram for these picks here. Ah, that's stupid. So what I would do is what other people consider stupid that Caserio does that I think is proving smart. He's really taking it forward. He's like saying, oh, no, we'll just dabble into your 2024 allotment of picks. No big deal. Because then he knows that he's going to be around in 24, or at least have them at some point in 23 to use his draft capital to go get what he really wants. So that's what I would try to do if I were going to fleece a team with Laremy Tunsil, is just try to get him into, hey, you know, we'll just take some of your, a little bit of your top stuff in 23 and just a little bit of your 24 stuff. That's the kind of package I would build. But relative to the Cowboys, Stephen Jones is too salary cap conscious, and they've got bigger contracts coming up for them to realistically do that. So I don't think it's going to happen. I think it'll generate a lot of clicks, though.
I do think it will generate a lot of clicks, and it already has. When I think about this, and I mean, I just will walk through the pros and cons. To start, you did a great job addressing
the Dallas perspective. From a Houston perspective and what the front office has shown us so far, I don't think this is the kind of trade they would really consider at all. They have this unanimous, I almost want to call it unfounded, but clearly, I mean, he's a great prospect. He's shown great leadership, but this front office loves Davis Mills and they want to give him every opportunity to succeed this year before they even consider looking at the 2023 draft. They didn't even consider looking at the veteran market, trading away your left tackle when really having two bookends on that offensive line is something that they've said is important, something they're really excited about. I don't see them doing that to Davis. I don't think that Nick Caserio wants to put Lovie in a situation where last year was, which is sad because Cully was ultimately fired anyways, but it was an understanding they were not going to compete. And I think he wants to put Lovie in a good spot. This is his second hire. This one needs to work for both of them. And I don't think trading away Tunsil does that unless you get an incredible offer. And the pros of this, the cons really just had to do with Davis Mills in the 2022 season. But the pros of this, and I don't know if the fan base recognizes this, but the Texans are in an incredibly precarious situation financially with Laremy Tunsil after the restructure that he did 2 months ago. He's essentially in a position to hold the team hostage financially. One, already he can. It would be $16.6 million dead cap in 2022, and it would be an additional $16 million next year. But after that, he's going to be a very difficult contract to trade. And then re-signing him, Tunsil has shown at every step that he will take the most money he can get where he can find it. I think the Texans are looking that they're probably going to have to pay Tunsil, maybe not reset the market again, but top five, top four left tackle money. And that's going to be a tough question for them internally, because you have to wonder, so he'll be 30 at that point when we're in that offseason. If Laremy Tunsil is going to be part of a Super Bowl contending team for Houston, do you think you're going to get there while he's there? And does that kind of salary cap designation to him bring you closer? And that's a difficult question to wrestle with. So if you're offered the opportunity to get a first-round pick and additional day three compensation, that might actually bring you closer to competing 2-3 years down the line than keeping Tunsil, just because you can go out and continue to find different impact pieces as the league evolves. But no, I don't think this trade would happen. For me, I think you would either need a first-round pick and more, or you would need multiple day two picks. Essentially, either a first is a pick I consider, hey, if you have a competent GM and you should never be employing someone who you don't think is competent, Houston, obviously the fans and the ownership have a big belief in Nick Caserio. A first-round pick is a guaranteed starter, and a second-round pick or a third-round pick is someone that you strongly expect to contribute as a starter within their first two seasons. So I'd either need multiple day two picks or a day one pick. And like you've said, I don't think Dallas is really going to be the team to cough that up. But if they were to, it would be hard not to at least consider.
All right, here's where I think you could fleece Dallas. But like I said, it's the salary cap implications combined with draft capital. But here's where you could fleece Dallas in a theoretical Laremy Tunsil trade. It would take a set of conditions, though. Condition one, Houston has got to be horrendo 0-7, okay? And the Davis Mills experiment is conclusively failed, even 7 games into the season. Also, you need Tyron Smith to have a setback in his rehab, and he could be a go for the Super Bowl type of thing. You need those two conditions. Then you can talk Tunsil. But at this particular stage of the offseason, the preseason, I think they know. I think they have a plan, even if it's a horrendous plan. And I think the Texans want to see what Davis Mills with putatively a full cupboard, even if the cupboard's full of generic brand ingredients, what he can cook up. So that's really all there is to say on the Tunsil trade.
Yeah. And I mean, I think the question becomes, can you get that kind of capital 2 months from now? And the thing is, you probably can't, which is why it seems you and I are both in agreement that a deal like that is essentially impossible unless either Dallas is operating in a way where they're more desperate than we believe and not afraid to tie themselves to Laremy Tunsil financially, or where Houston is less invested in some of the current pieces of their team than they would have been preaching to you all offseason.
All right. Well, that was fun. Let's move on and talk about Ogbonnia Okoronkwo. So, you know, he was someone that looked like he was just a role player with the Rams. He got a few sacks, you know. But as he's on his second contract with the Texans, it really looks like he's starting to put together stuff he learned with the Rams his first few seasons while he still has relative youth and really looking like an effective edge rusher in Lovie Smith's scheme. So do you think Okoronkwo is coming into his own, or has he just been kind of a preseason star, you know, like when Kramer did taekwondo or karate against the kids in that one episode of Seinfeld?
I mean, I think he's played as well as you could have hoped for the preseason. He looks like someone that you both hoped and has now shown that he likely deserves to be part of that pass rushing rotation. Is he someone that unequivocally is going to start or be a huge impact piece for Houston? I wouldn't go that far. But it looks like he's doing more in the opportunities he's been given than some of the other guys on this roster. And you're seeing the flashes that kind of led you to sign him away from the Los Angeles Rams. I still think that Hughes or Mario Addison likely open week one as the starter across from Gennard. But I really like what Ogbo's done so far. He's shown speed, he's shown power. Just two great performances from him. Do you think he's a lock to make the team?
Yeah.
Where do you think he fits into the defensive end rotation?
I think he fits in as someone who gives those guys a break. I think that he's someone that you'll be able to count on whenever Addison, Hughes have their, you know, veteran moments, because the later on you get in the season, the more it's going to wear on them, and he'll have a little more energy, more stamina, because he hasn't had to take on the whole brunt of the season. I mean, he's only 27 years old. That's what I'm talking about. In terms of, he's still got some of that relative youth remaining, and he's been able to put it together just a little bit. He did it with the Rams. So I think that he does make the team.
Yeah. I mean, we've talked about this before, and I think one of the keys to Houston having a successful pass rush this year is they might not necessarily have an elite tackle to put across from Jonathan Gennard. Gennard obviously projects as the number one defensive end on the team, someone who you think can have a double-digit sack season, and it's not really much of a projection. It's just, hey, if you stay healthy and the defense is improved in the secondary, you get the snaps in that you deserve, it's probably going to be double-digit sacks. But on the other end, they might not have an elite talent, but can you moneyball it? Can you have an assortment of talent that, when rotated properly, when put in the right spots, when guys are able to go out and play at 100%, can that lead to just a really consistent second edge rusher, even if it's taking a multitude of guys to do that? And I think having Ogbo play this well says yes, he can spell Mario Addison, Jerry Hughes, Rasheem Green as needed. So I would agree that he's a lock to make the team, and it's just an encouraging development as the defense is going to hinge on generating pressure and letting their guy, a lot of their playmakers are at the second level. It's the linebackers, it's Jalen Petrie. It's all the new corners that they have. And he should help them play their best game.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying is when you look at Levy Smith's most successful year as far as a team goes, you go back to 2006, the Chicago Bears, and it was a multitude of rushers. He had, which I'm not really seeing yet on this person with this personnel. You know, you had your Tommy Harris and your Tank Johnson, but really, it was only a with 6.5 sacks. It was Alex Brown with 7 sacks. You did have your 12 sack guy in Mark Anderson. That could be the Jonathan Grenard analog. But really, it was kind of offensive line rotation.
Mark, we keep losing you.
Guys who are I keep getting lost, huh? Yeah, I'm the one that keeps getting lost. Yeah, I am lost, John. I mean, you know, with my sense of direction, I wondered what happened when I turned 34. I looked back on my life and I was like, where did I go wrong? And where I went wrong was in 2006 when I saw Super Bowl 41 and I was for Peyton Manning because my dad was an Archie Manning fan. And that's where I went wrong, was I should have been for the Bears for Levy Smith because he was doing it his way, John. He had Mark Anderson, who was getting 12 sacks, led the team. That's the Jonathan Grenard analog. He had Adewale Ogunleye with 5 sacks, and he had Tommy Harris getting 5 sacks as a defensive tackle. And it was just this rotation of constant players, and then it was the playmakers on the back end that were getting it done. Like your Lance Briggs, which I think they have, let's say, in Christian Harris, just to be fun. Your Brian Urlacher, who let's say they have in Kamu Grugier-Hill, just for fun. And then you had Ricky Manning. I think Charles Tillman was on that team, too. So that's what I'm saying is that defensive line, that rotation, is going to set up what's happening on the back end, and there's a place for Okoronkwo. That's what all that's where I got lost, but then that's how I got back on the road with my four-wheel drive of a mind.
So I did not mean I was lost in your rant. I just mean that I could not hear you through the computer audio, but when you started on that story about being 26, we got you back crystal clear, and that's good because I do want you to have good connection for this final debate that you and I were having yesterday of a topic. Would you want to tell the audience what we were discussing yesterday?
All right, so if y'all been listening to the Texans Talk podcast, you know, earlier in the year, John was saying, we need to get Toro on the banner. And I think he even tagged me on Twitter and stuff. And I'm like, okay, well,
I wanted Kisterian.
Hey, I mean, you got to put Toro on the banner because he's like the reigning number one NFL mascot or some stuff. So you got to have him on the banner. And I think the picture of Nick Caserio that we have along with Toro is just perfect. Because it looks like Nick is kind of like, ha, yeah, you know, fun with Toro. Yay. And it really was a way to draw attention to just the enthusiasm that's been permeating throughout Bayou City Sports since the hiring of Levy Smith. And so now we got to change it, but I don't know who to change it to. Of course, Levy Smith's going to be on there. But in terms of the players, Davis Mills seems like a lock. I don't know that he should be on there simply because I don't think that I think he as a player just kind of blends in with the action. He doesn't really do anything catalytic, not like previous quarterbacks for the Texans, win or lose. It was really all about them. I really don't feel like it's about Davis Mills, as weird as that sounds. So, you know, you got to look at your other superstars in the making. And I would put Levy Smith and Derek Stingley. Those are the guys I put on the banner. What about you? You can have up to three.
Okay, so I agree. Lovie Smith has to be on there. Point to the audience and just minor side discussion. Mark, when we got to speak to Lovie briefly after practice last week, or God, that was 2 weeks ago now. I was, guys, the beard is for real. It's immaculate. It's beautiful. Everything it was promised to be. But Lovie's kind of the face of the good feeling around the team, the direction, really has brought a lot of respectability back to the organization. But I do think that Mills has to be on there. And we can think of this as a discussion of what are the key players in this Texans season. And Mills, I think there's a number of factors. One, he's the
quarterback. First of all, actually a great way you framed it. Who are the key players in this season? That was a good way to frame it. I didn't think of it that way. Because, see, I'm thinking long term, like next 5 years type of thing. That's actually a good way to look at it.
Like right now, the team will go as far or as not far. They'll lose as many games as Davis Mills allows them to. If Davis Mills is fantastic, if he is the quarterback that Lovie Smith and Greg Cosell and national pundits, guys like you and me, are saying that he might be, this is going to be a solid football team. This could be a potentially a 7 or 8 win team if you really want to max out how they could do with the rest of the current talent. If Davis Mills is terrible, this is a team that will be right in contention for the number one pick. And I would say would probably be the favorite for the number one pick if Mills was to flame out. But I don't think that's going to happen. And a lot of the optimism around the fan base, people have rallied around Mills. They love how level-headed he's been emerging from just really a lot of chaos last season, a lot of negative storylines that were not of his creation, really kind of weathered the storm and has come out and been a calm presence to lead the offense, someone that the team raves about, the coaches raves about, the front office raves about, and then has started to get some national love. So I think Davis Mills has to be on there just because so much hinges on him. And the optimism, really, for people who believe and care about the team this year, it seems to manifest in Davis Mills as like the quintessential Texan this year, because his ceiling and his floor are really unknown. There's such a wide variety of outcomes. And I feel the same way about the Texans team this year.
And you actually to love and study football to appreciate it, because the people who have, those have kind of been their takeaways. Look, I don't think Lovie Smith's really going to run the same old Tampa 2. I think he might be trying something different. Or, Davis Mills actually is quite Mac Jones-ish with his type of play and production. His cast and coaching last year were terrible. And that's what I'm saying. People love the game, study the game. Those are kind of their takeaways from the 22 Texans, as opposed to kind of just the gloss over national narrative of, okay, all right, we're taking a look at the AFC South now. And Matt Ryan. Oh yeah, Jonathan Taylor. Oh, they're good. They're going to do well. And then, yeah, you know, Ryan Tannehill, he's got new weapons, and Derrick Henry's always great. And Texans, they're bad. And Davis Mills and Lovie Smith was, 20 years ago. And okay, let's get on to Trevor Lawrence. Oh, the hair. I mean, yes. Oh yeah. See what I mean? Like that kind of stuff. That's what lends to that, is when people are having to do the breadth of the NFL as opposed to actually going down deep and taking a look. And they may be a 6-win team, whatever. But at least when people who love the game, study the game, come away from NRG Stadium, they realize, oh yeah, these really aren't the same old Texans.
No. And for that reason, as we talk about Lovie's Tampa 2 schematic changes, it does look like they're calling the defense a lot differently, at least from what we've seen in the preseason. I would make the argument that Petrie might be more impactful this season in terms of the narrative written. Maybe not long-term, because I think Stingley's ceiling is higher. I think a lockdown corner, you really can't put a value on it. But in terms of storylines of this season, Petrie, he could legitimately lead the team in tackles. He's kind of the poster child for how they're changing the defense to accommodate the new talent. Local Houston guy, the single digits are clean. I would put him on the poster as my final pick. And just
I think Petrie's going to get a lot of national talk very quickly as someone you're like, oh, who had 12 tackles for the Texans? And it's a feel good story. He's a talented, unique player. Kind of like in Isaiah Simmons when he came out of Clemson, obviously taken higher by Arizona, but it looks like Houston actually knows what they're doing and how they want to use him. And I'm really excited about Jalen Petrie.
All right, here's my vote. Lovie Davis Stingley. Lovie because it's Lovie. Davis because, like you said, 22 is all about him. Stingley because I think if he has a pick six or something in the first four games, that's just going to get people's attention that the Texans have a playmaker on their team again.
Yeah, okay, that's fair. Let's do that.
No, what's your vote? What's your vote?
I think that's the compromise vote, and you got two of my three, so I think that's got to be the choice.
No.
Let's get some football players back on the team page, you know?
No. Like, who would you pick?
I would still put Petrie there because I think the single-digit look is really – you really can't go wrong. You can't.
Oh, so you would go Lovie, Mills, Petrie.
Yes. Lovie in the middle, just beard in all of his glory. Davis Mills, you know, he's our quarterback, number 10. And you've got, like, the no-fly Petrie, single digits five, and look very clean.
I'm going to have to go with Stingley just because I think he's got a larger national presence right now than Petrie. Petrie's more of a local thing. But, you know, by this time next year, it may be Petrie that you put over there instead of Stingley, because I think everything you're saying about him is right. He's going to just really attract positive attention. But right now, I mean, I got the LSU fan base. You know, they're bigger than the Baylor fan base. And so that's why you take the number one pick first round pick versus second round pick. So that's kind of why I'm going Stingley over Petrie.
All right. I'm with you, Mark. You've sold it.
All right. Well, good. That, you know, I kind of feel like Colonel Sanders after he was able to install a KFC franchise at one of his restaurants. I was afraid I was going to have to be like Colonel Sanders when he'd get mad at a franchisee and he'd go in and he'd take all their pots and he'd throw them in the parking lot. I'm glad I didn't have to do that today.
All right. Well, I'm glad you didn't either. I'm glad you snuck in a food reference. Apparently we cannot do any episode without you doing that. As we get ready to wrap up here, anyone live on Twitter, we're kind of experimenting with this. Eventually might find a way to host it where Mark's on his own account speaking and we could answer questions afterwards. But for now, we're just trying to get the show live, trying to get more people listening. If you have any advice for what we're doing, things that we could incorporate to the podcast or incorporate to having this live on Twitter, my DMs are open. Please let us know. And Mark, where can they follow you on Twitter?
At the real Mark Lane. Be sure to make TexansWire.USAToday.com your homepage and just hit F5. Like, if let's say you have a kid, okay, and he's 5 years old. When he comes home from school, you say, hey, kid, here's what we're going to do is you're going to learn IT. And then you just have them hit F5 on Texans Wire till it's dinner time, okay? And then that's a good thing.
Well, yes. So make sure you guys are following the Texans Wire. You can read both of our work there. Again, my name is John Crumpler. I'm one of the analysts of the Texans Wire, and I'll be doing a lot of opinion and game recap this season. We're so excited to really have a team this year that's going to be worth writing and watching no matter how it goes. So thank you again for listening and for the podcast audience.
Wait a second. I would be remiss if I didn't say thank you to Brian Bearfield, of course, Sarge, at Big Sarge Sports with a Z on Twitter. And, of course, Jordan Punn at Texans_thoughts on Twitter. They do great work at the Texans Wire, and also follow them on Twitter. And follow us because we're going to have updates throughout tonight's preseason finale.
Yeah, the four of us and our whole team should have this game covered from just about every angle. So make sure you're following the team and keep listening to the podcast. Thank you guys for coming.